Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava. Kunja Bihari. Jana Valava Girivara Dali Gopi Jana Valava Girivara Dali Yashoda Nandana Brajjana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Brajjana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Astotara Sata Sri Srimadhi Divine Grace Abhaycharna Arvinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Anandakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Seka Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Chamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Shri Vrindavandam Ki Jai Shri Gangamai Ki Jai Shri Jamanamai Ki Jai Srimati Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki Jai His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai The Lordship Shri Shri Radha Sham Sundar Ki Jai The Lordship Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai, The Lordship Sri Sri Gaunitai Ki Jai, Iskan Nur Ramanrati Dham Ki Jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the Lord's feet of Sri Sri Guru and Guranga. Hare Krishna. So today, we're not going to be reading out Srimad Bhagavatam verse, that we'll be discussing the appearance of these two personalities, the Supreme Lord, Lord Vamanadev, first, and then his illustrious devotee, Srila Jiva Goswami, after. So, because several places in the scripture, it is stated and recommended by the Lord Himself that His devotee be glorified more than Him, that we will discuss a little bit more elaborately on Jiva Goswami than Lord Vamanadev. So, in the 19th chapter of the 11th canto, verses 20 through 24, Lord Krishna was telling Uddhava that there are several things that makes one qualified in devotional service, several items. One of those items is Bhakta Puja Vyadika. So Bhakta Puja Vyadika means that his devotee should be worshipped and glorified with preeminence, which means like in front of him, glorified more than him. Then also in the 14th chapter of the 11th canto, chapter 16, it's stated there that Nirapeksha Munim Shantam Angri Renubihi. The Lord says that by the dust of the lotus feet of his pure devotees, he wishes to purify the entire world. Because his devotee is pure in heart, he's peaceful, he's neutral, he's not envious of anyone. So these are the qualities that attracts the fallen conditioned souls back to the Supreme Lord. Then also in the Adi Puran, Lord Krishna told Arjuna, Yome Bhakta Jana Parta, Name Bhaktas Chate Jana, Mad Bhaktanas Chaye Bhaktas, Teme Bhakta Tamamata. That whoever claims to be my devotee is actually not my devotee. But those who are the devotees of my pure devotees is factually my devotee. So, based on these verses, we'll be glorifying his devotee more today than Lord Vamanadeva himself. So, throughout the history of the Bhagavatam, we found that Lord Indra had some insecurity issues where he's always feel threatened by his position, that is, his heavenly position would be taken away. We found in the fourth canto, in the sixth canto, the seventh canto, the eighth canto, and then in the tenth canto, all these Lord Indra has had problems with different personalities. Down beginning with the fourth canto, he felt insecure by the sacrifices of Maharaj Prithu, that if he completed a 100 horse sacrifice, then he would be qualified to take his position as Indra. So he tried to steal the horse, the sacrificial horse, and he ended up in some problems there. Then again, in the sixth canto, he had some altercation with Vritrasura, where they were trying to say mantras. The mantras were pronounced incorrectly, and long story short, Indra got himself in a little bit of trouble. Then again, in the seventh canto, Lord Indra tried to mess with Hiranyakashipu. Whilst he was in meditation, he tried to kidnap his wife with the intention, Kayadu, with the intention of killing the child within her womb, Sri Prahlad. And again, his ideas and plans were defeated. He lost his kingdom to Hiranyakashipu, and so on and so forth. We all know that story. Then again, in the eighth canto, he again felt insecure. He disrespected his own spiritual master, lost his powers. Long story short, he lost the kingdom to Bali Maharaj, the heavenly kingdom. And then in the 10th canto, he turned a notch up trying to interfere with Krishna and his activities. And then we know what happened in the Govardhan Leela, so we all know that pastime. So down in the 8th canto, his mother, Mother Aditi, who is the co-wife of Diti, Aditi is the mother of the demigods, and Diti, her co-wife, is the mother of the demons. And their husband, Kasyapa Muni, when he came back from his meditation, Aditi, the mother of the demigods, was very sorrowful. And so Kasyapa Muni inquired from her that what could be the cause of her dejection. Just like in the first canto, you find where chapter 15, the Pandavas retired timely. When Arjuna came back after Lord Krishna left, Yudhishthira was trying to figure out the cause of Arjuna's dejection. And he was coming up with every thought, accepting the thought that Krishna had left. So similarly here, Kasyapa Muni was coming up with all different thoughts and ideas that what, and this is described in the 17th chapter of the 8th canto, by the way, that excuse me, that why his wife could have been so dejected. And from a Brahminical point of view, he was suggesting, did you disrespected some Brahmanas? Did you not treat it guests properly? Did you not properly offer oblations in the fire when I was gone? Did you, committed something immoral, whatever? And then she said, no, everything was fine. All the guests were well received, fire sacrifices were performed, everything was perfect. But my problem is that my sons, the demigods, headed by Indra, have lost all their kingdom to the demons headed by Bali Maharaj. And that's the cause of my sorrow, that we have lost everything. We now have to be scattered. So please do something about it. So she's asking her husband, please do something about it. So after speaking some strong words to her, that you're attached to children, you're attached to so much family life, and so on and so forth. I'm just trying to make it as short as possible because of time constraints. That the best thing to do is worship the Supreme Lord. And there he gave her directions, prayers to be used to worship the Lord. He gave a list of prayers and give directions how she should behave, like live celibate life and so on and so forth. So she did that, and she had the audience of the Lord, who said that, I did appear as your son before, when in your previous lives as Prishni and Sutapa. I came as Prishni Garba. And again, I'll appear as your son, that just go and worship your husband. So her husband told her to worship Vishnu, and now Vishnu is saying, come and worship your husband and be very devoted and chaste, and in due course of time, I'll appear. So she did exactly that. All along, her motive is not for pure devotional service. Her motive is that her sons be reinstated, headed by Indra being reinstated in the heavenly planets. So, as she came back to perform that worship to her husband and follow that instruction, due to her purity and dedication to her service, she was able to recognize that the Lord actually appeared in the heart of her husband. She could see the Lord appear in the heart of her husband. And then, through the powerful semen of Kasyapa Muni, the Lord was transferred into her womb. And in due course of time, she gave birth, the Lord appeared, and he first appeared exactly as Krishna appeared to Devaki and Vasudev. He appeared in his four-handed form, blackish complexion, all the weapons of the club, chakra, lotus, and disc. And then, very beautiful, so he appeared to show them that I am the Lord, that here I have appeared and I'm fulfilling my promise that I'll appear, that I'll come as your child. So he appeared. Then he transformed himself into this little baby, this little dwarf Brahmana. There are elaborate discussions and descriptions on that. So, at that point, all the demigods came and they performed worship to this child, and they brought presents. Some brought the deer skin, some brought the straw, the water pot, the begging bowl, and all of that was, and they were fully convinced that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he appeared as this little dwarf Brahman, this very beautiful child. So because he appeared as the younger brother of Indra, then his name became Upa Indra. So at that point, we're going to fast forward. At that point, he heard of the sacrifice that is being performed by the Brahmanas, headed by, so Bali Maharaj had the sacrifice and the Brahmanas were performing. So he went there at the sacrificial arena. And when he went there, it's described that his effulgence was such that immediately everyone recognized him to be the Supreme Person. His effulgence was great, everything was shining. So they all got up and offered obeisances to him. And Bali Maharaj, the chief host, came to him as a cultural custom that you came to my place, you came to this place of sacrifice. Please ask for whatever you want, that you came for something and I'm here to fulfill it. So this little beautiful child said that all I want are 3 steps of land to my steps. So Bali Maharaj was thinking, is that all? He said, come on, you know, I'm the emperor of the entire world, both the material and the heavenly planets. Ask for much more. That you're a child and your mentality is childish, that's all you can think of. Ask for something more. I remember when I first became a devotee, I took my first job. I was the accounts clerk for this big multi-million dollar company. And so they were very favorable Hindu people. So one day, our temple, the project had just started in that part of the country. So one day I asked him for a donation to help us to acquire the land and all of that. So I asked him for $5,000. And he immediately got up and he stormed into his office and said, hey, come here behind me. So I went behind him into his office and he started almost screaming. He said, what's wrong with you? At a rich man like me, you're gonna ask for $5,000? He said, ask for $50,000, ask for $100,000, because, you know, I have that capacity. Don't be that childish to only ask for $5,000. So then he calmed down, so I said, okay, can you give us $75,000? He downed his head, he said, man, you Hare Krishnas are greedy, you're asking for a lot of money. So anyway, like that, Vamana Dev was told by Bali Maharaj, ask for something more, ask for anything, land, riches, villages, so you can support your Brahminical life, cows, whatever. Just don't ask for 3 spaces of land. Then the Lord went into philosophical discussion that no, that one should be satisfied, that if one takes more than is necessary. Anyway, it goes on a long story. But anyway, that's all I need. That's all I want. So at that point, Sukracharya came. Sukracharya was the guru of the demigods, the demons rather. So he came to Bali Maharaj, he said, don't you ever do that. That's Vishnu in disguise and he's going to take everything away from you. That they are, according to scriptures, according to moralities of scriptures, there are certain conditions that one can break his promise and everything would be okay. And Bali Maharaj said, no, my word is my word. My word is greater than my life that I've given, and it's going to be so. So he disobeyed the orders of his spiritual master. So this is another lesson that if one can disobey the orders of his spiritual master, if that guru is directing other than Krishna consciousness, directing his disciples to do something other than worshipping of the Lord. So here directly, Sukracharya is telling, do not worship the Lord, do not go towards him, do not favor him. And he disobeyed. So as he did that, he said, okay, you can have your wish, you take your steps. So He took the first step that covered the entire material creation. He starts expanding. So krama means steps. And then urukrama means big steps. So the second step, he covered the entire cosmos and peered the spiritual sky, and that's where Ganga Devi came from, through his toe. And then he asked for his third step, so then his name became Trivikram, three huge steps. So long story short in that pastime is that he had nowhere else for the Lord to put his third step. So at that point, the Lord arrested him with the ropes of Varuna. And in that state, all the while, he was trembling because, not in fear of what, because he's tied up or because everything is taken away, he has lost everything. At that point, it's described that his relatives and friends and everyone, they were criticizing him and rejected him because now he has lost everything. So, but he didn't mind that. What is more important to him is that prayers and worship to the Lord continues. So this is a very important lesson that, like Prabhupada said, he told Bhakti Charu Swami that the four signs of advancement, that time Bhakti Charu Maharaj was Brahmachari, said the four signs of advancement is how humble one becomes. So one cannot be humble without being humiliated. We see that happen to Prabhupada, we see that happen to every prominent devotee, that we are humiliated in so many different ways, and that what exponentially grows our humility, as we'll see in this, in the life of Jiva Goswami also. So he was all humiliated, tied up, his wife came, was praying and begging and so forth. But one thing that the Lord noticed, that Bali Maharaj never failed from continuing to glorify him. He never said, well, oh, this is very unfair, you're tying me up, you took, you know, this and this from us, you're unfairly, like, favoring the demigods. Nothing like that. He completely remained in a humble position. With all, he was the emperor of the entire world. He remained in that humble position and continued to glorify the Lord. Then he finally said, cutting short again, that please place your third step upon my head. So that's what the Lord did. And the Lord became so pleased with him that because of your exalted position as a devotee, which you just now proved to the world, that despite your most exalted position as the head of the entire creation here, as the king, the leader, through your prowess, but you took the most humble position. That means that you're most qualified. Very, very strong lesson for us to learn. And therefore, I am now going to become your guard, that I'm going to send you to rule an entire planet of your own, down the lower planet, Sutala. And not only that, you can take your grandfather with you, who was dear Prahlad Maharaj, witnessing the entire scene and was also glorifying the Lord. You can take all your family members and everyone and be there and live, as the story goes, happily ever after. And I'll be your personal guard. So at that time, Lord Vamanadev took over the heavenly kingdom, and in due course, he reinstated Indra. So in a very brief nutshell, that's the pastimes and pastimes of Lord Vamanadev. So now for Srila Jiva Goswami, there are a lot of conflicting information about the time of birth of Srila Jiva Goswami. Like some places says that he appeared in 1533. Which cannot be correct, because Lord Chaitanya appearing in 1486 at 1533, he would have been 47 years old, Lord Chaitanya. And at that time, Lord Chaitanya was, the last few years he spent in Jagannath Puri, he didn't leave. So, and Lord Chaitanya left at the age of 48. But it's all, everyone agreed, all the acharyas, and it's confirmed in the Bhakti Ratnakar by Narahari Chakravarti Thakur, that in 1514, when Lord Chaitanya came to Ramakeli and met with the three brothers, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, and their third brother, Sri Vallabha or Anupam, who is the father of Jiva Goswami, that Jiva Goswami was sitting on the lap of his mother. So he was about maybe 2-3 years old. The exact date is not confirmed. And at that point, when Lord Chaitanya came there in 1514, immediately this little Jiva Goswami jumped off the lap of his mother and ran to Lord Chaitanya. So his mother noticed and noted very carefully this little child's spontaneous attraction for Lord Chaitanya, seeing him for the first time. So as Lord Chaitanya was discussing with his father, Sri Vallabha, and his uncles, little Jiva would be hiding behind the trees and trying to peep and trying to listen to what Lord Chaitanya was telling his uncles and his father, trying to absorb. A little three-year-old or something like that. He was trying to absorb what's going on. So then Lord Chaitanya told Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis, he said that the work that you two would leave unfinished, that little Jiva would complete it, would continue it. And I bless him that he would develop Gaura Prema. Not just he was a little child. So it's understood that Jiva Goswami, he didn't acquire knowledge in this material world. He was empowered, he was given that before he came. That in his original form, he's Vilas Manjari, one of the eight principal gopis of Srimati Radharani. His uncle Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. So he came with that. He already had all that potency, whatever was necessary to execute the mission of the Lord, he came with that. So as a child, shortly after this incident, his father passed away, Sri Vallabha. And they were filthy rich. They were at Fayetabad, was their palace, because the three brothers, Rupa Sanatan and Sri Vallabha, were engaged in the Muslim government's administration. So they were filthy, filthy rich. It's so described that when they were dressed, they would look like Indras. So much opulence. So in that palace, Jiva Goswami was there with his mother, the little Jiva. And he became the sole heir to everything that his uncles and his father had possessed. Because his uncles, they were Naishthiki Brahmacharis, they never got married. But they were rich, they had all this wealth, so much wealth, that filled boats, their gold coins filled so many boats. Very, very opulent. But it's described that he inherited the opulences of his uncles and his father. But what opulence did he inherited? Not the riches that they have, but the devotion and knowledge that they have. Because his father, Sri Vallabha, was a staunch devotee of Lord Ram. Extremely dedicated devotee of Lord Ramachandra. So much so that when they asked him to chant Krishna's name, he tried it. And he said he's going to commit suicide, that he cannot give up the name of Ram. Very, very staunch devotee. So anyway, as a child, the only person he had was his mother. Like Narad Muni, in his previous life, he only had his mother. So Jiva also, the only attachment was his mother. So when he was little, his mother would be describing Puranic stories to Jiva Goswami, little Jiva. And when she would describe stories to him, he would say, according to Shastra, it's not like that, it's like this. And she was thinking, Shastra, where do you learn that from? You're just, you know, this little boy. So one day she was telling him about the past when Krishna appeared and got transferred from the jail cell of Kamsa to Gokul, from Devaki Nandana to Yashomati Nandana, that she said this is the same Krishna that was transferred. And he said, no, that according to scriptures, there were two Krishnas. One was Devaki Nandana and one was Yashomati Nandana. And this he described later when he grew up, elaborately described that in the Gopal Champu. Gave elaborate descriptions of why he said that when he was a little boy. So then she started telling him of the, you know, continue. So his mother said, okay, you're right that there are two Krishnas, and continues. So then he asked his mother, he said, in what age did Krishna appear? Now a little three, 4 year old boy asking these questions. Then his mother said, it's Dwapar Yuga he appeared in. He said, sure, Dwapar Yuga? He said, yes. He said, no, I think he appeared in Satya Yuga. So his mother said, why would you think that? He said, what's the dharma of in Satya Yuga? What's their activities of worship? His mother said that it was premeditated meditation on the Lord. That's the yuga, that's the dharma. So he said, yes. Look how you're describing how everyone had one pointed attention to Krishna when Krishna was born. Everyone was so totally focused on Krishna. They were totally meditating on him. That why would they meditate on him if it wasn't the yuga for the yuga dharma for the age? Why would they perform meditation? So his mother said, yes, you're correct. Then he said, you know, but I think it was actually Treta Yuga. So his mother said, why did you say that? So he said, what's the yuga dharma for Treta Yuga? So the mother said it was elaborate sacrifices. We heard Lord Ramachandra in Treta Yuga, his father performed these huge sacrifices that stretches 8 yojanas, and each yojana is 7 miles, or 7,856. So the sacrificial pit was 56 miles in diameter, which is something like from here to Okala. So elaborate sacrifices. So he said, just see, they are performing 1,008 sacrifices for the protection of Krishna. Because that's what was happening after Krishna born. Nanda Baba invited all the brahmanas and they're performing these huge sacrifices. So he said, why would they perform sacrifices if that wasn't the yuga for the age? Then the mother said, yes, you're right. Then he said, but I think it was actually the Dwapar Yuga he appeared. So her mother, scratching her head, said, now, child, why are you saying that? So he said that, what's the dharma for Dwapar Yuga? She said, deity worship. So he said, can't you see, according to what you tell me in the pastimes, all of them are worshiping Krishna with ghee lamp and achman and, you know, snyan and everything, all the deity worship. That why would they do that if that wasn't the yuga dharma for the age? Then the mother said, yes, you're right. Then he said, mother, but I think it's Kali Yuga he appeared in. Now she got really confused and said, why are you saying that? He said, because they are performing the dharma for the age. And what is the dharma for Kali Yuga? Chanting the Lord's holy names. So he said, can you see? All of them are chanting the name of Krishna as Krishna appeared. All of them are chanting the Lord's name. Every one of them are jumping for joy and chanting. Jai Kanaya Lalaki, Jai Kanaya Lalaki. So then your mother said yes. Then he said, Mother, I have to confess to you that actually all these four ages combined when Krishna appeared. That these four ages, they all combine, they all come in different personalities, and they're all here because of Krishna's appearance. So as a child, the mother was telling Jiva Goswami Lila Tattva, the pastimes of Lord Krishna, all these Puranic stories. And Jiva, in turn, was giving his mother the tattva behind it, the truth, the philosophical truth behind it. All this as a child. So after some time, when he was less than 10 years old, the worst could have happened. His mom left this world. And at that point, that was his last straw of attachment, just like Narad Muni, the last straw of attachment. And so before that, as I mentioned, that he's Vilas Manjari in his original form. But who are his worshipable deities? Krishna Balaram. Strange enough. So as a child, he would constantly have the two deities, Krishna and Balaram. When his mother would call him for his meals, he would say no, he was too busy. He's worshiping his deities. He would offer them chatter. He would bathe them, dress them. He would cook for them. He didn't know to cook, but he would cut fruits and offer to them. He would circumambulate. He would dance and sing for them. When he'd go to sleep, he would keep them in his arms, Krishna and Balaram. And that's the only way his mom can get him to sleep. I know when my son was little, the only way we can get him to go to sleep, we had to give him his little Hanuman deity. When he was like 3-4 years old, he would jump up in the night and just shout, Hanuman, Ram. I was thinking, what's wrong with this child? So at that point, my wife bought him this little Hanuman doll and a little Ram deity. And I think he has them until now. So sometimes like that, you know, children would do these things and we don't know where it's coming from. So as a child, he was always absorbed. So one day, his mother decided to test him. So she hid the Krishna Balaram deities. And he starts screaming and crying. He would not do anything he wants. And finally, his mother had to give him back his deities. And that night, Krishna Balaram appeared in his dream and said, seeing that you're so dedicated to us, seeing that you're so attached to us, we're going to offer you a special benediction. And those Krishna, the same Krishna Balaram deities, and then they switched around their forms and showed the form of Gaura and Nityananda. So he looked at his form. He recognized Lord Chaitanya because he saw Lord Chaitanya when he was small, when, you know, still a little child. And Lord Chaitanya blessed him, but he said he doesn't know this next form. Nityananda, he doesn't know that person. But he offered obeisances to Dandavats anyway. Then Lord Chaitanya picked him up, hugged him in his arms, and he said, I offer you to Nityai. And he gave him to Lord Nityananda, who also embraced him. And Nityananda said, I bless you that you would completely develop Gaura Prem. So, like that, he had that impression in his heart. So when his mother left, he decided that he wants to go to Navadvip. Immediately left, so he joined some little pilgrims and they went to Navadvip. And there are elaborate descriptions by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. That when he went there, he heard that Lord Nityananda is there. And he heard that Lord Nityananda was staying at the house of Srivas Pandit. So he immediately ran to the house of Srivas Pandit, knocked on the door. Srivas Pandit opened the door, and there he saw the same person, Lord Nityananda, the same person in his dream. He saw Lord Nityananda. Then he offered obeisances, flat dandavats, and Lord Nityananda picked him up in the same way, embraced him, and said, I bless you that you would develop Gaura Prem. He said, that's the same thing you told me in my dream when I was a little boy. He said, no, I'm seeing the personality. And at this time, he was not even 10 years old. He was just short of 10 years old. So he was still a very little boy. So when Lord Nityananda saw that he was so enthusiastic in Gaura Leela, he said, I'm going to take you and give you, I'm going to take you on parakram in all of Navadvip so you can learn all these pastimes. So before he did that, he asked Srivas Pandit that please bless this child. So Srivas Pandit give his blessings. Then all the devotees there also give their blessings. Then he said, I have to take you that the mother, that the source of this Gaura Leela and Gaura pastime, the source of this Yuga Dharma is Lord Chaitanya. But I want you to want to take you to the source of that source to take her blessings, Mother Sachi. So then Lord Nityananda took little Jiva to the home of Sachi Mata. But before he reached Sachi Mata, he met the Sachi Mata's personal assistant, Ishan, who Lord Nityananda asked to please bless this child. So Ishan also gave his blessings. Then he met Sachi Mata. So Lord Nityananda told him, please offer your dandavats that this, that Lord Chaitanya is the source of the universe and Sachi Mata is the source of Lord Chaitanya. So here is the source of the source. So that way he offered obeisances and Sachi Mata also gave his blessings. She put his hand on his head and says that in all motherly affection, I bless you that whatever is necessary and needed to execute the mission of Lord Chaitanya, that you'll be equipped and empowered in that way. So like that, with just under 10 years old, he had the darshan and he got the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, his uncles, his mother would be telling him, Lord Nityananda, Srivas Pandit, Ishan, Mother Sachi Devi. So what more can you ask for? So then Lord Nityananda said, now I'm going to take you around Navadvip. And that's the first Gaur Mandal Parikram that was performed. It was Lord Nityananda himself. Took little Jiva to all the different islands and explained all the different pastimes. And this is elaborately described in the Navadvip Dham Mahatmya by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One such pastime is that one day in Sachi Yuga, back in Sachi Yuga, one day Parvati was chanting the name of Ram. And she was doing a Ram meditation or Japa, Ram, 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 but she wasn't getting any ecstasy. And on the other hand, her husband, and this was in Kailash, her husband, Lord Shiva, he was chanting and he was feeling all sorts of ecstasies. So she said, what's happening that you're getting ecstasy from chanting and I'm not? Excuse me. So what's happening? So that I'm chanting the name of Ram. So he said, okay, I'll give you the name of Krishna. You chant the name of Krishna. So she was chanting the name of Krishna also, and same thing, no ecstasy, whilst Lord Shiva was in all sorts of ecstasies. And she said, wait a minute. You know, generally the wife has that instinct that she can like read the mind of the husband, that he's tricking me in some way. So he said, you are chanting some different mantra. You're not chanting what I'm chanting. What is it that you're chanting? He said, oh, I'm chanting Gauranganam. And that's how I'm feeling all this ecstasy. So she said, give me that name, that I want to chant the name. So he said, okay, I'll give you the name, but here is not the best place to chant that name. So if you come to Gaura Dham, I'll bring you to Gaura Dham, and that way you'll get very quick results in chanting the name of Gauranga. So, Lord Shiva brought Mother Parvati to Navadvip, transported her to Navadvip. So Navadvip is eternally existent. And on one of the islands, and then she started chanting, Gauranga, 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 Gauranga. Within a day and a half, it's described in the Mahatmya that Lord Chaitanya appeared to her. And she felt so blessed. She said, how come you appeared to me so quickly, only after a day and a half? And I was chanting the name of Krishna and Ram for such a long time. I wasn't feeling any ecstasies and no one appeared to me. Then Lord Chaitanya said that the names of Krishna and Ram are guarded by the 10 offenses, that if one commits the 10 offenses, Bahu Janma Koriya Adi Shravana Kirtana Tabutana Pai Krishna Pade Primadana, that unless one avoids the 10 offenses, one cannot get the blessings of the holy names. They cannot get the ecstasies. But my name, Gauranga, there are no offenses. Anyone can chant my name and be blessed. That's why Srila Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya instructed that we chant the Panchatattva mantra before we start chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So Lord Chaitanya said that, and this is in Satya Yuga. And so this pastime proved that Lord Chaitanya's form is eternal. He manifested in Kali Yuga, just like the sun. This, like right now, the sun is up, but it's a little cloudy. So, or in the night, the sun didn't disappear. The sun didn't go away. It's there, but it's just not manifested. Similarly, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, and Lord Chaitanya is eternal, but only in the Kali Yuga that is manifested to us. So Lord Chaitanya said, ask for a benediction. She said, I have a really big problem. Because as we know, Parvati Devi, she is Maya Devi. She said that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and yet again, this is in Satya Yuga, and she's quoting Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is the original, the eternal Chaitanya Charitamrita that she's talking about. So this book that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote is not something that he just wrote now. It was there before. So he said in that book, he declared that wherever Krishna is at, wherever the Lord is at, Maya cannot be there. So, because where is Krishna, wherever there is Krishna, there is no Maya. So that way I cannot associate with you. Because Krishnadas Kaviraj make it very clear that I can't. Wherever you are, I have to stay out. So I cannot associate with you, my Lord. So he said, well, you know, that's true. But if you can't associate with me, then please associate with my devotees. That you can do. She said, no, that's a bigger problem. Then he asked why. She said that whenever one devotee come to give her his association, the others come and they're singing, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gaura Chandra Bole, Kuta Nindra Jao Maya, Pisachira Kole. That Lord Chaitanya is calling you. You're sleeping on the lap of the witch Maya. Get up and come. Lord Chaitanya is calling. So he said, she said, even the devotees are rejecting me, that I cannot even associate with the devotees. So then Lord Chaitanya said, well, what can I do? She said, please, I want the dust of your lotus feet on my head. So then Lord Chaitanya said, okay. So he scraped the dust off his lotus feet, and he performed the Simanta ceremony with her. So you know what Simanta means? They parting the hair upwards, and he put the dust of his lotus feet in her hair. He said, from now on, you're my consort, and your name is Simantini Devi. So what's the name of one of the islands, one of the nine islands? Simanta Dweep. So that's where that pastime took place. So anyway, like that, Jiva Goswami was learning all these pastimes from Lord Nityananda. And after he learned, he got all the darshans and everything. By then he was 10 years old. So then he told Lord Chaitanya, I want to go to Jagannath Puri with you, Lord Nityananda. I want to go see Lord Chaitanya and take the darshan of Jagannath and understand, you know, all these intimate relationships. So Lord Nityananda said, no, that you're way too young for this, that you first need to be educated. Therefore, go to Kashi, Varanasi, and become educated. So here's another thing of the instructions, the importance of following instructions. He could have said, no, I want to go and get darshan of Lord Chaitanya. But no, Lord Nityananda, his Shiksha Guru, is saying, go and get educated. Like one time, when a Prabhupada disciple told me this story, Chaitanya Jivan Prabhu, in the early days, Srila Prabhupada was there at the temple wherever they were. And he just joined the movement, brand new Bhakta. So, and our dear most well-known Jayananda Prabhu called him. He said, come help me to build a Ratayatra cart. And he said, no, that I want to go and take darshan of Prabhupada, offer obeisances. And Jayananda Prabhu told him, he said, the greatest obeisance one can offer to the spiritual master is to execute his instructions. So immediately he didn't go, he followed Jayananda Prabhu to execute instructions. So that was very significant of Jiva Goswami. So anyway, he sent him, he said, go, there is a prominent devotee there by the name of Madhusudan Vachaspati. Madhusudan Vachaspati is the intimate and senior disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. So, as we know, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a Mayavadi before, he was an impersonalist. But when he met Lord Chaitanya, he became converted, he became one of the greatest Vaishnava scholars. So after that conversion, then Madhusudan Vachaspati became his disciple. And he was preaching and performing his activities in Varanasi, which is the center of all the impersonalism and Mayavad philosophers in Kashi. So Madhusudan Vachaspati was a Vaishnava saint and acharya. So he sent him to get education there. And very quickly, this little Jiva, this young boy, he spent like 10 years there. By the time his education was finished, within 10 years, he mastered all the scriptures. He was so prominent that everyone used to come for him to edit and proofread their books. Without his sanction, it cannot be printed. I was just a little child, just 19, 20 years old. So when that was completed, that's when he was sent to Vrindavan. He said, now you can go to Vrindavan, your education is completed. Now you can go to Vrindavan, and you need to, that you have learned so much, but there's one more lesson that you need to learn. There's one, and this is the biggest of the education that you need to get. Humility and service. Again, same thing like with Bali Maharaj. So he said, this is what you need to learn. So he sent him to take shelter of Sri Rupa and Sri Sanatana Goswamis. So when he went there, Rupa Goswami greeted him, welcomed him, and introduced him to all the Vaishnavas, all the other Goswamis, the other five Goswamis. They all gave him their blessings because he was the little boy. He was only 19, 20 years old. But he was so well educated and so equipped that he was very well respected and renowned for his scholarship. So Rupa and Sanatana Goswami took him all around Vrindavan, parakram on Vrindavan. So now he had parakram of Gauradham, and now he's having for Vrajadham. So when he got all the darshan, it explained all the past, and this happened there, this is where Lord Chaitanya stayed, and all these different pastimes. Then Sanatan Goswami, who was the guru of Rupa Goswami, told Rupa Goswami, now accept him as your disciple and train him. Now he's actually getting into training after all his scholarship and all his blessings. Now he's actually getting into training. So what was his training? So Rupa Goswami says that, as usual, the spiritual master has a tested disciple. So Rupa Goswami could have said, this is my nephew. He gets so much blessings. He's so qualified. No, come, I can give you initiation, you know. We can, you know, one of these little family thing. We can. But no, he said no, that you have to go through the necessary test, training, and qualification. So he made him his personal servant. So he was cooking for Rupa Goswami, cleaning his place, fanning him, taking care, doing madhukari to get, you know, alms and so forth. Very, very humble services. And after a year, he said, okay, now you're qualified, I'll give you initiation. So he initiated him. So like that, he still remained Jiva Goswami. So one day, Jiva Goswami was fanning his Guru Maharaj. I know he's kind of getting late, so, and we were only like halfway. So one day he was fanning Rupa Goswami, and there was a well-known acharya, Sri Valba Acharya. He was a contemporary of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Sri Vaishnava Sangha something. Anyway, he was well-respected by Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. So he came, and at that point, after 1 year of menial services, Rupa Goswami engaged Jiva Goswami in editing and proofreading his books. At that time, he was writing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So when this Valabhacharya came, he asked, what are you doing? So Rupa Goswami said that, you know, I'm writing the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He said, can I see it? He said, oh, sure, yeah. So he was only halfway through. It wasn't completed. So he said, let me take a look at your manuscripts. So that was the only copy they had. In those days, there were no printers or anything, copy machines. So he gave it to him, and when he looked at it, he saw where Rupa Goswami wrote that bhakti and mukti. To his knowledge, this is what he recognized Rupa Goswami wrote. Bhakti and mukti are like witches that you strive for this liberation, and these are witches that you're going after. So Sri Valba told him, he said, you know, I think this is wrong, that mukti, everyone is going after mukti. She's a great personality. You cannot address her as a witch. You cannot address her like this. Then Rupa Goswami said, oh, what do you think I should do? He said, I think you should change it. So he said, okay, I'll change it. And at that point, Jiva Goswami was fuming. He was fanning his guru, Rupa Goswami. And he's thinking, how dare this acharya? Well, of course, he was new to Vrindavan. He didn't know who this acharya was. He didn't know. He said, how dare you correct my Guru Maharaj for something that is right? So anyway, after Valabhacharya left, he went to take bath in the Yamuna. And Jiva Goswami went behind him. So he went and he said, you know, I'm not so happy that you corrected my Guru Maharaj. So he said, what did I do wrong? He said, you told him that he compared mukti and bhakti as witches. So that's completely wrong. He said, how is it that's wrong? He said, that's not what my Guru Maharaj wrote in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He said, the desire for bhakti and mukti, that's like a witch. And then he said, oh, I probably missed that. So because Jiva Goswami was proofreading his books, you know, on palm leaves, he had it with him. He said, let me take a look at that. So when he looked at it, he saw the word spriya, which means the desire. And he said, oh, I'm sorry that I didn't recognize that this word was there. that I didn't recognize that Rupa Goswami meant the desire for these things like a witch. That, yes, he's right, and yes, you're right, I do apologize. So immediately, Jiva Goswami went to take his bath, but Sri Valva immediately came back to Rupa Goswami and said, you know, I think you should leave your book the way it is. That thanks to your disciple, Jiva Goswami, that he corrected me. So Rupa Goswami said, what? My disciple corrected you, such a famous personality? He said, yes, he pointed out. And when I looked at it, I saw it's correct. At that time, Rupa Goswami got furious. And he was waiting. So Sri Valabha left and he was waiting for Jiva Goswami to come back. So when Jiva Goswami came back, he said, what is it that you told Sri Valabha? So he honestly relayed everything. And he said, what's wrong that's a great personality? You don't correct great personalities. What's wrong if I correct something that he advised me to? He said, you know, that because of your arrogance, that you're not qualified to live in Vrindavan, that you should get out. Now, this is the second time you're doing that. So the first time that there is this big Digvijaya, this big pandit, that he was moving around all over and conquering all the other scholars. And once he defeat them, he has this Digvijaya sheet that you have to sign your name accepting defeat. So this Digvijaya came to Rupa Goswami, said, I want to debate with you. So Rupa Goswami said, I don't have time for that. I'm busy writing my books. I don't have time to debate with anyone. That I'm not qualified either. You're a big scholar. So he said, no, not like that. If you accept defeat, you have to sign your name here and we got to show it to the public. He said, what's the big deal? Rupa Goswami just signed his name. I accept defeat by you. Sign his name. So then the Brijvasis told Digvijaya that, you know, you might defeat Rupa Goswami, but you have to go to his guru, Sanatan Goswami, that you have to defeat him also. So he said, okay. So he went over to Sanatan Goswami. So Sanatan Goswami is doing his bhajan and doing his parakram. He said, I don't have time to waste with this guy. That whatever you want me to sign, I accept defeat. So he gave him the paper and he signed it. So now he said, oh, I'm now on top of the world. So the Brijvasi said, no, there's one more person. You have to reach his Rupa Goswami's disciple. You have to defeat Jiva Goswami. So he said, oh, that little boy, because at that time he was only 19, 20 years old. He said, oh, if I can defeat his guru and his param guru, what about him? No big deal. So when he went, Jiva Goswami was also performing his bhajans. And he said, you know, I'm here to challenge you. So he said, oh, we're in Vrindavan, we're doing bhajans, we don't have time for this, that, you know, you're a great scholar, you know, we accept defeat. So he said, no, you can't just accept, you have to sign your name here on the sheet. So he said, okay, bring the pen, I'll sign my name. When he looked at it, he saw Rupa Goswami accepted defeat, Sanatan Goswami accepted defeat. And he said, wait a minute, no, this is not going to go down like this. That you're saying that you defeated my guru, my param guru? He said, no, I have to make this right. So then for 7 days, he debated with this Digvijaya and trashed him left and right with Vedic evidences and defeated him. And then the Digvijaya had to sign his name accepting defeat on the paper. He was the last name on the sheet. And after that, then Jiva Goswami tore the paper up and threw it away. So Rupa Goswami said that you wasted 7 days in the holy dham arguing with this nonsense, that you're not qualified to stay in Vrindavan. Therefore, I kick you out. You should leave. So like that, plus I command you as your guru that you cannot do madhikari, you cannot beg for alms, that whatever you get by natural arrangement, you eat, and if you die, you die. So strict Rupa Goswami was. So that way, Jiva Goswami was kicked out of Vrindavan, so he was on the outskirts and he was in a cave continuing to perform his bhajans, and every 3 days he would mix Ganga dirt, Yamuna dirt with the Yamuna water, and he'd eat some of that. So after some time he got really, really skinny, pale, And it's described, some of our acharyas say, that it was at that period that he wrote the six sandarbhas. He followed his guru's instruction to fast and to take on all his austerities, but he still continued his service. He took his guru's instruction, his chastisement, without saying a single word. He didn't say, "Oh, Guru Maharaj, you haven't heard my side of the story, that I was trying to protect you and Sanatan Goswami and create a defense." No, he didn't say a word. That's another of his humility. So at one point, Sanatan Goswami, I'm going to try to wrap it up, it's getting really late. Sanatan Goswami used to do long parikrams from Govardhan all the way to Mathura, going around stopping all the places and so forth. So when he was doing his parikram on Bhajan, some locals told him, he said, "You know, there's one Babaji in that cave that he's always crying and performing a lot of austerities, that you should go and give him your blessings and also take his darshan." So all this time, Sanatan Goswami didn't know what was going on, because Sanatan Goswami used to be at Govardhan and Rupa Goswami used to be in Vrindavan. So Sanatan Goswami decided to go and visit this Baba in this cave. And when he went, he was shocked to see that this is his own Jiva, Jiva Goswami. So he asked, "What happened?" So, you know, at that time, you know, we would be excited to tell him, "Oh, you know, Guru Maharaj kicked me out, this happened, that happened." Jiva Goswami didn't say a word. He said, "I'm not qualified to live in the holy dham, so therefore I'm here." So Sanatan Goswami thinking, something is wrong. So he went back to Rupa Goswami, who is his disciple, and he says, he didn't tell him anything. He says, "How is your writing of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu going?" He said, "I have to be honest with you that it's going very slow, that if Jiva Goswami was here, it would have been completed by now." So then he said, what are the three fundamental principles of Lord Chaitanya?" So Rupa Goswami recited, Namaruchi, Vaishnava Seva, and Jivadoya. So he said, "Can you repeat that last one with me here?" He said, "Jivadoya." So he said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Mercy to the Jivas." Then he said, "So what about our Jiva?" So he used a play of words that Jiva Goswami, addressing to the Jivas. Then Rupa Goswami understood. He said, "Okay, I'm going to go and call him back." So he brought him back. And then nursed him, brought him back to, you know, like to good health. So anyway, it's really getting late. So I'm just going to, you know, lastly, as Jiva Goswami was the very, there are a lot more to go, but Jiva Goswami was the last to take on the legacy. And not only that he was writing these books, it says that he wrote more books and verses than all in the disciplic succession combined. He wrote more than 550,000 verses. He commented on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu on the order of his Guru Maharaj. Then he commented on the Sanatan Goswami wrote his commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam called Vaishnava Toshini. And then Jiva Goswami wrote his commentary on Sanatan Goswami's commentary called Lagu Vaishnava Toshini. So anyway, as all of them left, Jiva Goswami was not only doing that, but he was securing the land, writing wills. He's the first one to write a will, by the way, in the history of the world. And that's how all his property was being secured from the Muslim and be there today. So then finally, as he was getting old, he had to decide, now all his literature, all his wealth is here, that Lord Chaitanya predicted and prepared. Now I have to distribute them. So at that point, three young devotees, Narottam, Shamananda, and Srinivas, he sent them off with these books. And long story short, the books got lost. They got stolen in by Viramvir in Vishnupur. And by Krishna's arrangement, Srinivas made Viramvir, the king of Vishnupur, his disciple, and then he made the entire kingdom all his disciples, and the king ordered that all of them should now help to translate these books, help to print these books, because in those days there were no printing presses. You had to manually write them. And remember, when Rupa Goswami was writing, he was writing on palm leaves, they're not even paper. But Jiva Goswami was so famous and so productive, we came in the line of Lord Brahma, who was a manager. And the only other manager after Jiva Goswami in that category is our own Srila Prabhupada. Writing, printing, reading, managing, developing, securing, and everything you can think of all at the same time. So anyway, the Akbar was so pleased with Jiva Goswami that he walked to Vrindavan to visit him, and he said, ask for a benediction, ask for something. He said, give me paper, because in those days paper were more scarce than gold. He said, give me paper so I can write my books on. So that's how the first paper material came about. So when they were there in Vishnupur, they finally got back all the books, and by Krishna's arrangement, Lord Chaitanya's arrangement, that the king engages the entire kingdom in helping to write, print all these books, copy them. Because these three personalities, Narottam, Srinivas, and Shyamananda, they weren't able to copy all of these and go out and preach. So there are yet a lot more to go, but we'll stop here. It's already 9:20, we went way overboard. So these are just some synopsis of the life of Jiva Goswami. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jiva Goswami ki jai.
We're talking about, Chaitanya Charitamrita pastimes and Jiva Goswami. So this is the question I have. How did Jiva Goswami say mada in Bengali?
Mada?
Yeah, how did he say mada in Bengali?
That I don't know.
Mother, you keep saying mada. I was making fun of your pronunciation.
Okay, I grew up in British English. Yes, they don't say mother. Mother and water. That's the English. So anyway, I guess he said matter. Yeah, okay. How do you